Welcome to theconversation.org, making sense of these times.
Could it be? Yes, it could. Something's coming, something good. If I can wait, something's coming. I don't know what it is, but it is gonna be great.
This show is brought to you by MightyCompanions.org. And now your host, Suzanne Taylor.
I'm sitting here with Catherine Morton, who put together a wonderful book called Women of Courage, in which some friends of mine are telling their stories, and some people I would like to be friends of mine are telling their stories. And so Catherine and I are visiting, trying to figure out what we can do to save the world, so to speak. What we can do next to save the world. What is going on in the world that needs saving. Just, you know, one of those kind of conversations. And so she started to tell me a story, and I thought, well, okay, time to share this with a bigger audience. At least we'll give it a try. And why don't we just start with what it is you were going to tell me. You factor yourself into sitting across from me now and dishing the dirt.
All right. Well, I was speaking at Mills College last night, and at this beautiful event, and had two of the women from the book were there with me, and they read their stories. And this gentleman came up to me and said, you know, he said, I've been buying massive amounts of your books because, and giving them to people, because my 85-year-old mother sat down and started reading your book, and she didn't get up until she'd finished it. She'd read it cover to cover, and she said to her son, this is so important, and this is a television series. There should be a television series based on this book, based on this material. And so the mother gave the book to this gentleman's wife, and she sat down to read a story, and she read it cover to cover. I mean, I'm so impressed with this because I don't even read a cover to cover unless I'm editing, in an editing process. And he said to me, you know, you really do need to make a television series out of this. And I was telling him about People Who Dare, and that I'm working very hard to try to set up a television series based on the whole series of books, with men, women, children, couples, communities, families, all of it. And he said, he just, you know, it was one of those moments where it was like we were surrounded in this cocoon, and he was looking into my eyes and saying, you must do this, and you must not stop until it's done. And I said, well, you know, I'm a very tenacious person, so that's good. I will, and I will not let go of it because I believe in it that much. And he said, let me tell you a story. That's why this is going to be long, because there's a story within a story.
I love it so far.
He said, and I can't remember who it was, it was one of the original founding fathers of the Civil Rights Movement, and I'm sorry the name escapes me, but he was a white man in the North, and he was down in the South giving a sermon at a Southern Baptist church. And he was giving this sermon and being very impassioned about what he was saying, and all the congregation's hands were sitting in their laps with their hands together, which is not something that you have happen at a Southern Baptist church. The people have their hands together. They're up, and they're going, amen, brother, and they're... But periodically, this one woman in the congregation would stand up and say, amen, brother, right on. But one person out of the whole congregation, he thought, oh, my gosh, I've lost it. I'm bombing. These people hate me. And he finished, and the whole congregation filed out, and they all very politely shook his hand and left. And when he came to this one woman, he said, you know, why, you know, did you really like my sermon? You know, was it good? And she said, son, that sermon was terrible, just terrible. And he said, well, why on earth were you standing up saying amen throughout my sermon? And she said, son, I have a job, and my job is to be the one who stands up and says amen and hallelujah. And regardless of you or anybody else, I'm going to do my job. And he said, regardless of what people say to you about this People Who Dare television series, regardless of whether they like it or don't like it or this or that, you must do your job. which is you must get this set up on television.
Sort of a kinky little reflection there.
Yeah.
But this is wonderful. This person who said this to you is a treasure.
Oh, he is.
And I know that in my experience, things that are outside the lines or things that I have some vision about, which seemingly is not shared by everyone, one little echo back is, in a sense, all I need to let me know that I haven't gone off half-cocked, you know, that I'm not crazy. If somebody, in a sense, looks me in the eye and I get that they get whatever I've done, then I know that I'm out there in visionary land and just where I should be rather than, you know, needing to rethink. Yeah. And so it sounds to me like he did that for you.
He did definitely do that for me. And in fact, it's a place where I feel sometimes very beaten down. And I didn't realize it until he said, told me that story and looked at me like that and said, you must prevail. And you must not let it go. And you must persevere. And it was it really kind of got my got me at the gut level when he said that to me. It was like, wow, somebody else who really believes that deeply in the idea, you know.
You know, one of the things we were talking about before was how we're switching from a world of independence and what rather than individualism to this interdependence where we are really to become enmeshed with one another. And it sounds to me like, you know, this is one of the aspects of that this kind of, you know, if you were going to kind of plot everything, how do things work, what's going on, you would see that somebody who really believes in you, just, you know, one echo, one mirror, you know, that stands in front of you and says yes, is incredibly empowering, can be incredibly empowering, and as opposed to your own passionate efforts that you lose faith in if there's no wink back. You wonder, God, have I made a mistake? Frequently you haven't. You're just ahead of the game and you're just where the game needs to go.
Right, exactly.
But if nobody winks back at you, you lose your courage. You know, my friend Lex Hickson, who I feel I am standing on the shoulders of, and you strangely are several cousins by marriage related to, was that kind of empowerment for me. You know, him looking me in the eye, and I already admired him, and him treating me like an equal, just created me fleshing myself out in a way that deserved to stand there. And, you know, this is so valuable to have in our lives, anybody who come along and really see what we're up to and give us that encouragement.
Yeah, we all need that.
We
really all need that.
So now that you've got all these women of courage...
Before you ask me that, let me also say, one of the things that Lynn Twist talked about at Mills College when she read from her story, because we were talking to quite a few young women there, and she talked about how when she first started being involved with the Hunger Project and all those years that she was working, there was this vision that they had, which was so outside the box, so outside of normal thinking about hunger, and how she had this vision of the work that she wanted to do in the world. And she said, and she was saying to these young women, you know, you will have a vision, you will have a passion, and it's up here. And over time, what happens normally is people start talking you down to reality, and you get yourself, at some point, your vision becomes, descends down to this point of reality that people have told you about. And she said, for me, I had the great, great blessing of being with people who had that same vision, and encouraged me to force my reality to come up to my vision. And I thought that was a beautiful way to think about it, you know, that your vision is up there, bring your reality up to it.
Well, couldn't we all use a lot of, you know, happy supporters like she had? We're a lucky girl.
At
some level, it is luck, you know. Certainly, you need to deserve the blessing, but... you're very lucky if you're surrounded by people who get it and who really help you along the way.
Yeah.
So what I started to say was, I wonder if there's anything, now that you've identified these courageous women by virtue of doing this project, and I know that you did the project because you were looking for your own inspiration. I've heard you say that on other talks.
Right.
And so, okay, now you've stoked yourself. You've got all these incredible people. Is there some action for them all to take together? where somehow or other they can become a pool of courageous, you know, beyond a television show even. Maybe you've got an institute or some such.
Wow, there's a radical idea.
Well, it's all about how are we going to form these liaisons now? How are we going to form new power circles?
Right.
How are we going to introduce new ideas that are our collective strength into the grid that's all about separate, you know, power struggles?
Yeah.
So it seems like you've got yourself a playing field.
Yeah.
I don't know how it works together, you know.
Yeah.
But it's women, too, which is... Women are so much easier to collect and, you know, to have help each other. This is natural to us.
Right, exactly.
So it's very exciting. You had the seed of something that could go in many different directions that could be so enriching to the world.
Yeah.
As we were talking about before, the world is being somewhat imploded, particularly, we were talking about ghetto situations where people are so stuck there. And these courageous examples are... what they can bootstrap themselves out of those situations on, just seeing how others have done it.
That's right.
You get a little example of something that you can follow. That's a whole other aspect.
Yeah.
You know, when you think things are impossible, but you get an example of somebody who's broken through, it's like the 4-minute mile. Oh,
yeah.
That's possible.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
So your stories are very much in that vein.
Yeah. And it's interesting because the women in the book are now really, some of them, when they speak with me together, they have this grand curiosity to meet one another and to be in touch with one another. And in fact, I have a grand desire for people in the world to be in touch with them, which is why at the back of the book there's a directory so people can contact them directly. You know, my grand vision is that they are a pool and they will interconnect. And the people out in the world who read the book will interconnect with them.
Why don't you just set that in a pattern on the internet, on a list, and create it so that those women, by one keystroke, can email to one another for openers.
Right.
And I don't know how that next relationship goes with other people, you know, joining. But first set the pattern where I love having a group of peers.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm on lists of things that interest me, and I love having those people as sounding boards.
Yeah.
Or audience,
right.
Or potential allies for things that I might, you know, want to recruit for, so to speak.
Right.
So why don't you just open an email list? Look at this new world.
Yeah, it's great.
How we can do this.
It's great.
I mean, it used to be we'd have to have a conference, you know, once in a blue moon, and everybody flies to somewhere. But now, my God, we just get on our email and click, 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 click. And there we are. There we are. So why don't you open that up with these women?
That's a great idea.
I mean, that's perfect.
That's a great idea.
And then among them, God, what kind of ideas will start to flow about making more of what it is they all represent?
Yes, absolutely.
I went, by the way, for the sake of our listening audience, to a wonderful evening that was held for this book where 4 or 5 of the people who have pieces in it read their pieces, and it was a beautiful evening. I mean, these pieces are all they're very real.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing... there are some other compilations that are out now that you would think would be valuable, and I'm disappointed in them. I won't mention names. I don't actually remember the names, but compilations. There's one women's compilation out now of people giving their sort of inspirational cheerleads, and it's all kind of philosophical and abstract.
Oh.
And I found myself reading it, and some of the same people who are in your book are in that book.
Yeah.
And I found myself reading it just not caring, you know.
Yeah.
It's like preachy. That's the word.
Oh,
it all sounded preachy.
Yeah.
But your
that's
book,
the worst. I really dislike that.
Well, it just doesn't grab you.
No, it has absolutely no impact.
You recognize it. You see the good-heartedness in it.
You
see the good ideas that are trying to be expounded. But it doesn't work in that style.
It doesn't work at a gut level.
No.
And when you tell, you know, and Mary Pfeiffer is the one who really reminded me of the power of storytelling. You know, she said you can lecture and you can say something to somebody about, gee, X, Y, Z, or you can tell a story and within that story is demonstrated X, Y, Z. One of them, you know, will land in the gut and the heart and become a cellular part of your makeup, and the other one kind of goes in one ear and out the other. And I think that's why the book really hits people at a gut level.
Yes, it has that quality of real.
Mm-hmm.
You tune in and you go on the ride with each person.
Yeah.
And by the way, you know, on this website of this radio show that's so new that it doesn't have a history to that everybody understands. So I want you to know that what we'll do is we'll put the book on the page that you come up on the website to get onto the radio program, and so people will know where to order the book, and you know, so that as we are not keeping repeating the title, which is Women of Courage, and this is Catherine Martin. What do you call yourself, editor on it? Because I know you wrote some of it.
Half of it I wrote myself from interviews that I did with women, and the other half were stories that were sent to me, and I worked with the women on them
to edit them and get them
right. So I am author / editor, or editor and author of this.
Right. Well, everybody will know, you know, where to get it and that sort of thing. So we don't have to keep hammering that home.
Here
we are in modern technology.
We love that.
So one of the things that I'm just going to use this excuse, I emailed to Catherine, is something that I wanted to bring into the radio show. And maybe we can think about the women as I read this paragraph and think about it as an energy that these women might very well represent. I've been working with this paragraph for the last little while, just being inspired by it, passing it around. It got passed to me initially in email. And it's from Ken Wilber. It's on his website, just on the website from a piece. Oh, I didn't put the title in here. Well, see, it'll be on my website. Yeah. Everybody will know where to look for this. But this is it's toward the end of the piece. The piece is actually talking about some problems in the world with transformation, quote-unquote, and that there's a lot of pseudo-transformation. You know, we're all groping around, and in our grope, there's a lot of kind of presumption that we've so-called got it, where in fact we're just kind of, he calls it translation, where we're kind of going in circles, but transformation is where we don't just try one technique after another, but we actually tune in to this essence of spirit in ourselves, and we really make the leap into being that spiritual being. And for those who have made that leap, he writes this paragraph toward the end. Let it start right here, right now, with us, with you and with me, and with our commitment to breathe into infinity until infinity alone is the only statement that the world will recognize. Let a radical realization shine from our faces and roar from our hearts and thunder from our brains. This simple fact, this obvious fact, that you, in the very immediateness of your present awareness, are in fact the entire world, in all its frost and fever, in all its glories and its grace, in all its triumphs and its tears. You do not see the sun, you are the sun. You do not hear the rain, you are the rain. You do not feel the earth, you are the earth. And in that simple, clear, unmistakable regard, translation has ceased in all domains, and you have transformed into the very heart of the cosmos itself. And there, right there, very simply, very quietly, it is all undone. Wonder and remorse will then be alien to you, and self and others will be alien to you, and outside and inside will have no meaning at all. And in an obvious shock of recognition, where my master is myself, and that self is the cosmos at large, and that cosmos is my soul, you will walk very gently into the fog of this world and transform it entirely by doing nothing at all. I haven't read that out loud.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it's like him, he gets on this kind of track. It's like, you know, he's tuned in and he's just trying to stream from that essential knowingness of what in the world is it? What's going on?
Yeah.
And, you know, in a way, you've had to have been there to really appreciate this. But once you've been there, this is a wonderful kind of call to, oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the place. Oh, right. You can just feel it out of what he said here.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is certainly the kind of energetic that the women could be playing with.
Huh.
You know, this piece, another piece, whatever, but first start with that sense of kind of shaking on the deal and being attuned to the possibility of what the alignment could be. You know, and then you conceivably create a force out of a disparate kind of group of people. And you just see, where will it go from there? Who knows?
Yeah, yeah.
This isn't something you set goals for and have a 5-year plan, but it's something you set in motion.
Right.
And the women, you know, so much easier a sell than men on unification and alignment.
Yeah.
And, God, women of courage who start out already, you know, in this kind of rarefied atmosphere.
Yes, right. Right.
Of course, there's lots of women of courage, people just who have survived would tell their stories. But you know,
yes.
And we can have all kinds of people kind of chiming in.
Yeah. But and it's interesting because women, courageous women are in, I think, a rarefied, well, let me see if I want to say that. But it's the telling of the story and the recognizing of the fact that you're courageous that somehow, I think, elevates you into that rarefied thing. Let me tell you about Anna Smith. And this has to do a little bit with the whole discussion of courage and how women in general don't see themselves as being courageous. Not one woman in this book said, I'm courageous. When I invited them to be in the book, they said, oh, I have a really great friend who is amazing. You really ought to, or, you know what, I saw this thing on the news last night. You've got to contact this one. None of them said, one person, but actually she is not in the book, came up to me and said, damn right, I'm courageous. So there's something that goes on where in our sort of, I think it is more of a feminine quality where we like to sort of give off praise and we're kind of deflected over to other people, whereas taking it into ourselves we're maybe not quite as comfortable with. But the problem with that is that if you're deflecting it, you're not sharing your story. And by not sharing your story, you're really losing a lot of opportunity to have impact on other people, and a lot of other people who could have heard your story and been inspired by it have lost that. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's in the telling of the story that we all benefit from it. And there was this woman back east, she's in the sequel to this book, who, when I invited her to be in the book, she called me up and she said, why did you send me this letter? What are you doing? What do you want from me? What is this? And I said, well, Anna, she lives in this very small town back east. She's a grandmother, and her grandchild went to school at this elementary school. And behind this elementary school is a toxic dump, she discovered one day, because she saw the workers taking this stuff out there. And she became very concerned, and she started snooping around about it. And finally, she went all the way up to her city council and demanded that these contractors stop dumping. I mean, her whole community said, Anna, sit down, don't do that, don't make waves, you know, don't, never mind. She really put herself at great emotional and at sometimes physical risk, but she said, this is my grandchild. What is that toxic dump doing there? So I reminded her of the fact that she had single-handedly closed down this toxic dump. And she said, oh, well, and she hung up. And then the next day she called me and she was in tears. And she said, you know, I realize that your letter gave me a moment to pause and to remember what it was I had done, because I feel kind of alone out here and I had kind of forgotten.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think that is part of that storytelling. It's part of that saying, you know, where am I courageous in my life, and acknowledge that, tell a story about it when you can, and, you know, use the resonance of that courage that you've already experienced to have more. You know, use the resonance of all the women in that book to have more.
Yeah, it's just such a pregnant energy, and I see all the different, you know, many different angles on it, which is, in a way, being a woman in many ways, just surviving being feminine, mm-hmm. and doing well at it is very courage. It takes a certain courage that perhaps we all take for granted, because that's what we have to do, you know.
In my book proposal for this book 5 years ago, I had a picture of a baby on the cover of this book proposal with a feather, a kind of Native American look thing. And on the top I said, the initial act of courage is being born female.
That's cute. That's cute. And then again, you know, we're not trying to lord it over others. And, you know, females are really very, don't tend to stand on pedestals as a sweet kind of aspect of femininity. Mm-hmm. We serve with, you know, happily serve without thinking too much about it. And that's very sweet.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want to become braggarts, you know, but at the same time, we want to see the world we live in and know that we can help each other.
Right.
And we can help each other by holding up the best of what it is we know or do, or, you know, can show as an example.
Right.
And so there's the whole educational thing, too, to bring this out of people.
That's right.
You know, it's interesting. Judith Orloff, who is one of the people in your book and who's a good friend of mine, did you know that we launched her in this living room here?
No.
Mighty Companions did, yes. She was sent to me when the book wasn't even out yet, and we did a little evening with her, and then we had some videotape made of her. And we just became really good friends out of that. Judith used to, you know, after that, kind of pull on me to go to her speaking engagements locally with her. She had many speaking engagements in all the bookstores around, and she wanted company. So I would go with her. And I would notice this most interesting phenomenon. First of all, she drew a big crowd wherever she went, which is quite unusual for a first-time author.
Yeah.
Judith is the author of, for the benefit of the audience, a book called Second Sight. And something on the jacket says something about a clairvoyant psychiatrist, those two words. Now, those two words are not supposed to go together because, in fact, a psychiatrist treats a clairvoyant as pathological. So she would have to be treating herself as pathological. But she has quite a history of being a psychic. I mean, she's been in laboratories and been used by some of the, by Thelma Moss, who had the great Psi Lab here at UCLA. She was one of Thelma's research people. And she wrote this book to come out of the closet where the idea of being psychically gifted could actually be useful in medicine and useful in psychiatry, not something to hide and be ashamed of, or something aberrational that needs to be treated. So, first of all, she'd get this big audience, first-time author. How did they even know to show up? And then, I'll tell you the whole thing, and then we'll go back to how that audience managed to show up. And she would do her talk, and it would be a very respectful audience. It would be sitting there relatively colorlessly, like an audience. And then she would open it for questions and answers. Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you, hands shot up. This was a collecting place for people who've been too scared to tell their stories, who've been hiding in closets because they've had these psychic experiences. And I got to see, first of all, how full the world is of such people. What a relief it was to be in an audience where they could tell their stories. I mean, it's like homophobia coming out.
Yeah.
You know, this is the psychic coming out.
Yeah.
And so this really was such an example of how you kind of put something out there that seems like it's off the charts, but look, all of that energy comes out from behind closed doors and gets contributed to, instead of being hidden and shameful and not making its contribution to the world, kind of comes out and can come out in spades. And, you know, now Judith, of course, is really quite well respected. The book did, you know, sensationally well. She has a second book coming out. Maybe we'll put her second book up on the site. We'll put her first book up and the second one. She wants people to pre-order it so that it gets off to a really great start. We'll put that information up on the site.
I ordered one already myself.
Do you remember the name of it? It's Dr. Judith Orloff, something, something.
Guide to Intuitive, Emotional, and Sexual Health, or something like
good
that.
Good for you, Kathy.
Something like
close
that.
Enough. Very good, very good. But same idea, you know, put this stuff out where it's visible so that it can draw the others.
Yeah.
And we bring the best of people out that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, your whole Women of Courage thing, God, let us all hang out here.
Yeah.
And share our stories and climb on one another. And I've always had this sort of image of enlightenment or evolution being kind of people leapfrogging over one another.
Yeah,
you know, not going on some direct path, but having to go through each other as doorways.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's a great
well, it always
visual.
Seems true to me that's, you know, an image of what's true.
Yeah.
That we very much pick up our speed. Well, we've reflected on that a few times in this conversation.
Yeah.
And it does seem like kind of the idea that's coming into play in our world, this interdependence.
Yes, definitely.
That we don't go alone, we go together now.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of talk of that in all these different systems where no, it's all about how we compare notes, you know, that we've got kind of the new idea, now we really have to toss it around.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then we'll synthesize in a different place, which is the place we need to come to get out of this industrial crunch that, you know, is sending us to rack and ruin.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, one of the things in this book that that I know women really talk about is the sense of how valuable support is for them when they're doing things. And how, for example, Anna, when you don't have it, you know, how painful that is. So really important to try to find people in your life who will be around you, who know who you are, really who you are.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's another attempt going on. There's different waves going on in our world, I guess every world. But one of the things in our world is this attempt to come into circles. Marianne Williamson has her Renaissance project where she's trying to get people into politically oriented kinds of circles. Barbara Marx Hubbard for years has... is she in your book?
No, Barbara Marx Hubbard.
I'm sure she could have been.
Yeah, she definitely could have been.
She has had her empowerment circles, mm-hmm. and noticing that, you know, we gain our strength that way and we don't have these sort of things. You know, the 12-step programs are wonderful examples of how that works. But, you know, you need a problem to get into those. Well, what about all the rest of us, you know, who don't have the benefit of a problem? So not that we couldn't all find a problem, but I'm sure we could all find an addiction or two. But, you know,
that's an interesting thing about having not a problem, but a solution or an idea or something on a, you know, on the positive side instead of the negative.
Yeah.
And having a circle around that instead of a circle around a problem. We're done. Well, we're not done.
No.
But definitely we need more of the solutions around, I mean, circles around the solution.
Well, I always feel with those other circular things, like even Marianne's and Barbara's, although I, you know, certainly don't have a criticism of them, but I wonder if they have enough strength of something pulling them, as opposed to just the good idea of coming together in a circle, which we could certainly justify. But I wonder if you've got some secret there of courage, mutual support, something that moves things ahead rather than just aligns people in the way it is. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Not even quite sure. But I can feel that if it were your group of women authors,
mm-hmm.
that's what they would do for one another.
Yeah,
to whatever
exactly.
extent they still needed a support group, you know.
Right.
Mastermind groups, that goes way back.
Oh.
Napoleon Hill and Think and Grow Rich.
Oh.
There was a whole template of mastermind groups, and people, I don't know if they're still doing it, but I remember in years past there would be people who once a week would, small groups, they were always small, 3, 4, 5, 6 people maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe something like that. And they would meet for breakfast, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning, once a week, your mastermind group, which kept you plugged into something beyond yourself.
Right.
But I haven't heard of that lately, so maybe it's time for courage groups.
Courage groups. Imagine how wonderful that would be.
Courage groups of some kind.
Courage groups. Oh my gosh. I know there's so many people out there who, if they had a courage group that they went to on a weekly basis, their lives would transform.
Well, let's think of how, you know, this show becoming something that we put on the web and that we archive. And if there is any response to that, use me as the poll for that.
Yeah.
Or Catherine, we'll probably put your email up there too. But, you know, think that maybe this could spark something. And we'll listen, you know, the world, this is self-organizing universe we're living in now. So maybe something even out of this little focus of energy here might create more of that, but certainly I know you're thinking along these lines. I mean, here you are, the Madam Women of Courage, so, you know, you've got the baton.
Well, you know, I really wanted study groups to grow up. It's a similar thought process. I wanted study groups to grow up around this book where people would get together once a week, read a story, talk about it, talk about the elements that got that person where they went, how that applies in anybody's life. People could share things personally going on with them in their lives and how they might use that inspiration, that thing that they learned from that person.
Maybe. See, why don't we see if we get some response here? People, you know, feedback your responses to this. And do you think this is a good idea? You know, this is actually the way I want to use this radio show. I really do want it to be an energy center where you can tune in both to get jazzed, inspired, you know. Not so much news, so to speak, but inspiration more the kind of thing that there is a wavelength And when you tune in here, that wavelength is just beaming, whatever it is we're talking about. And it's something that, you know, you can gain strength from, you know, just by tuning in to listen to the different colors and shades of the same pulse. So I look forward to it being very interactive also, where, although God knows, you know, when it gets live, it can be very interactive.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, when it's not live, that we can, you know, be pseudo-live, and here we are in cyberspace, where if there's no time and space, you know, as God knows, we, us advanced souls have been told over and over. So, you know, here we are as one, and anybody can make their voice heard. And this is such a permeable medium, too. I find that, I mean, I love reaching out to people who inspire me, and it just turns me on when they respond back, and I think, oh, God, this is so different from when we used to have to write fan letters that nobody ever saw. Some of people are reading their email, and you can make contact, and you can navigate in a world that used to be, you know, used to be, you can open the doors where you couldn't open the doors before. Isn't this interesting?
Yeah, it's great. It's really great.
Who ever thought that there'd be a whole new universe to kind of stake out claims in and get good at? And
When you were talking, what I was thinking about, this is a little bit off from what you were saying, but you were talking about, you know, having people come on board, and I was thinking, you know, having people come, you know, ride the wave, and it made me think about how when I started out this book, the person who I was so very different than I am today, and it was this person who I was, I feel almost as though I was sitting by this river for the longest time, watching this beautiful, beautiful river go by. And I loved this river, and I would put my foot in periodically, and I would put my hand in and trail my hand in there. And then what happened over the course of doing this book is as though I stepped into this river, and I laid back, and I let myself be taken by this river.
Oh, and, that's beautiful.
And really as though I stepped into my destiny. And it's a thing I really want to share, because if you just, you know, it's just that thing of daring to step that little extra step over that puts you in. And all of the, and because before going on tour with this book, I was absolutely terrified of it. I was terrified of doing TV, live radio, live TV, live book signings. I was so scared, because the last time I had experienced being in the public and speaking, my kneecaps had done, you know, the vibrato thing, and my voice had been, you know, that quivery deal, and my smile was, and so I was so nervous about going out. And what I discovered is that I absolutely love being out. I love doing TV, radio. I love speaking in front of groups of people. It's not that it's nice that I'm not scared. It's that I love it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was just so scared of it, and yet somehow just coming up against it and finally being forced over into it, it was like, it was as though I was lying in this river of, oh my God, I love this, and why haven't I been here all this time? Why did it take so long to get me in here?
Oh, isn't this wonderful?
This
is really wonderful. Enviable, really.
Oh, it's just,
that you really found such a valuable thing to do, and I know it's the value of what you're doing that's really, you know, not, this isn't some clever thing you've done or you know, whatever. I mean, you're actually carrying a really potent energy.
Yeah.
And I guess it's just, you know, whipped you into this really beautiful shape. It's hard for me to believe, actually, that your knees were shattered. It's hard for me to believe.
Yeah.
You know, you're so together.
That's what I'm saying to you. It's as though I was carrying an old image of myself, and I had made it so real and concrete that I have forgotten to think, who am I now?
You're your own woman of courage here, you know. needless to say, you know, jumping in, really.
Yeah.
This is your story.
That is my story. And it's interesting, because people have said to me regularly on tour, thank you for being so courageous in doing this book. And I do the same thing.
Really?
I go, who are they talking to, you know?
That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, I'm envious, really. I think you've got yourself such a wonderful, wonderful milieu that you're working in. And I can just feel it. Possibilities that could, you know, come off this, and it's so right with women now. Not that I'm an anti-male, but we have so much to bring that can be so healing to the world. And we're able to do that now. You know, we've matured enough so that it seems to me that we can have the image, even though there's still discrepancies in salaries and what have you. We are so much what the world needs, and we're such a gift, really, to the masculine world that has created such difficulties for everyone. Just no villains here. Just the way sociological forces go. But it has seemed to me for some time that the salvation of the world really is with the feminine now, and that one way that we can think about ourselves, as you say, the women say, "Who me?" But that is a way we can think about ourselves, that we really are bringing a gift to the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, an aware and awakened female who is conscious of, you know, her activity can really take some, it's not pride, but know that, you know, this is, the future really is in our hands, and we are very valuable to this creation. And cherish ourselves, really, for this value that we bring, even though at times it may not look like that, or we may still be beaten down, or, you know, whatever we suffer that isn't all over yet. I have such a feeling of compassion, you know, toward my world that has gotten itself so messed up, you know. Just look at the barrage of masculinity that comes as government today, and wow. Is that not where we, you know, want to be, so to speak? There's another world that we are here to be the champions of.
Yes, that's very true.
Yeah.
That's very true, absolutely. And this book will impact men like it impacts women. I mean, except for the fact that we are women. I mean, we all have masculine and feminine within us, and everything that men are tremendously moved by this book. It's really amazing. It's
that doesn't surprise me. Yeah. And also, I find that among my male associates, they really would echo what I'm saying. Lex used to continually turn to me and say, no, you lead. It has to be a woman now. And he would be behind me, kind of pushing. Mm-hmm. And here, you know, for those people who don't know Lex, get on my website, take a look at Lex Hickson. But he was an avatar. He was a real world-class figure, and, you know, people who knew who he was in the world of comparative religion, you know, found him to be quite a leading figure. And here he was saying, Suzanne, you go first. It has to be women. Mm-hmm. That's a very dear thing that's happening among really conscious men who really recognize that what it is that the feminine is bringing is so vital to them.
And I'll tell you that in the same way that my husband has been wind behind my back, unbelievable wind behind my back. And
wind behind my back. Now there's a title, Kathy.
Oh, he has been amazing, just amazing. And in fact, if it were not for him, I would not have written a book, because I was screenwriting, and I was, you know, trying desperately to become successful at screenwriting. Because I'd always, you know, any kind of writing endeavor I had tried, I'd always been successful with. And so this one, you know, the wait period and the difficulty of it is so unlike what I'd experienced. And so he was saying to me, look, you know, this idea about this book came across, and it was like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm busy. I've got to go to L.A. I've got meetings. And, you know, and he kept kind of pulling on me and saying, Kath, I really think you should look at this book. I really think you should look at this book. And finally, because, you know, this is the beautiful thing about being with somebody who knows you to a depth and whom you trust with what they know about you. And finally, and he's like that for me.
Yeah.
And I finally had to recognize that he was saying something to me I needed to listen to. And if it had not been for him, I would have gone on my merry way to write another screenplay. But I stopped to do a book.
Should we give him a name mention?
His name is Frank Sloan.
Maybe we'll put him up on the website. Tell people what
he should be on the website. He should be on the website.
Then, now listen, here's the important question. Does he have a brother?
No, you had his cousin already.
Yeah, cousin was like, I mean, this is so odd. You know, people can't fully appreciate who you know, don't know my life story, but Lex Hickson was so important to me, and here's Catherine, and she comes into my life, and we're horsing around with her book and ideas and whatever, and I discover that she's married into this Hickson family, which is so odd. I mean, it's just a little quirky little extra for us, Catherine. Yeah. This is the cosmos winking at us, saying,
I know, absolutely.
You got business, girls.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can't wait to figure out what the rest of that will be.
Yeah.
So far, so good.
Yeah, definitely.
So thank you for this.
Yes, you're very
welcome.
It's like
we've sort of come to a natural ending.
Yeah, it feels perfect.
So I can't wait to see what we do next.
Good, me too.
Thanks Catherine.
Sure.
Thank you for listening to theconversation.org, making sense of these times. Now that you've heard from us, we'd love to hear from you. Click the feedback button on the show's webpage and share your thoughts. We'll be posting new shows approximately once a week. If you would like to be emailed when new shows are posted, let us know. This show is brought to you by MightyCompanions.org, dedicated to encouraging the awareness of ourselves as a one life and providing a meeting ground for those who share that awareness.